Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at a Supreme Court case that might make you rethink how much privacy you can expect in your home. Well, on wheels at least.
Interesting.
Yeah. We're going back to 1985. The case is California v. Carney, and it all revolves around a man named Charles Carney, his motorhome, and a run-in with the law.
Okay, so we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, right? Protection from unreasonable searches and seizures.
That's right. It's like, your home is your castle.
Right.
And the Fourth Amendment is like the legal moat and drawbridge protecting you from unwanted intrusions.
Exactly. So if someone wants to search your castle, they typically need a warrant.
Right. But what happens when your castle has wheels and can hit the open road?
Yeah, that's where things get a little tricky.
So let's break this down. Why are cars treated differently than our homes when it comes to searches?
Well, there's a longstanding exception for automobiles called the automobile exception.
The automobile exception.
Yeah. And the reasoning behind this exception is twofold. First, cars are mobile. They can be driven away quickly, potentially allowing evidence to disappear before a warrant can be obtained.
Makes sense. So it's all about the possibility of evidence disappearing before the police can get a warrant.
Right. And second, cars are subject to so many government regulations like licenses, registration inspections.
Right, right.
So the courts have said we have a lower expectation of privacy when we're behind the wheel.
It's like because the government already has a hand in regulating how we use our cars, they argue we have less of an expectation of privacy when we're on the road.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that. But what about Charles Carney and his motorhome? Where does that fit into all of this?
Well, that's where the lines start to blur. Carney was arrested for allegedly selling marijuana from his motorhome.
From his motorhome, okay.
Yeah. The police searched his vehicle without a warrant.
Without a warrant.
And found drugs and other evidence.
I see where this is going.
Now, the question before the Supreme Court was, does that automobile exception, the one that lets police search cars, more easily apply to a motorhome?
Ah, so it's like a home that can hit the highway.
Exactly. It's a hybrid part vehicle, part home.
So did the court see Carney's motorhome as more like a car or more like a house?
Well, the majority opinion written by Chief Justice Berger leaned heavily on the vehicle side of things. They emphasized that the motorhome could be driven away just like any other vehicle. And plus, motorhomes are subject to the same regulations as other vehicles on public roads.
So in their view, if it drives like a car, it gets treated like a car.
Pretty much. The majority ruled that the automobile exception did apply to Carney's motorhome, meaning the warrantless search was legal.
But I'm guessing not everyone on the court agreed with that decision.
You're right. There was a powerful dissenting opinion written by Justice Stevens, who argued that motorhomes deserve greater privacy protection than traditional cars, especially when they're being used as living spaces.
It sounds like Stevens is saying that just because something can be driven, it shouldn't automatically lose the same level of privacy protection as a home, especially when it's parked and people are living in it.
Right. He pointed out that Carney's motorhome was parked near a courthouse, and the officers had plenty of time to get a warrant. In Stevens's view, the majority's decision created a dangerous precedent that could erode our privacy rights.
It makes you wonder, is the law struggling to keep up with the changing ways we live and use vehicles? I mean, back in 1985, motorhomes weren't nearly as popular as they are today.
That's a great point. Think about how many people are living and working in vans and RVs these days. The rise of remote work and van life means the lines between vehicles and homes are blurrier than ever.
And that blurring raises a whole bunch of legal questions, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Do we treat a tricked-out Sprinter van differently than a massive luxury RV? What about those folks who live in their cars? I mean, where do we draw the line?
These are the kinds of questions courts are still grappling with today. The Carney case is more than just a legal puzzle from the past. It's a reminder that the law is constantly playing catch-up with our evolving lifestyles and technologies.
It really makes you think.
It does. Welcome back to our deep dive into California v. Carney.
Okay, so last time we left off with the court's decision in Carney, can we dive a little deeper into the majority's reasoning for applying the automobile exception to Carney's motorhome?
Absolutely. The crux of their argument rests on two main ideas. The first is that vehicles are inherently mobile. They can easily be driven away, making it possible for evidence to disappear before a warrant can be obtained.
So basically, they're saying the possibility of a quick getaway trumps the need for a warrant.
That's right. They were worried that requiring warrants for every vehicle search would really hinder police work. They emphasized the need for law enforcement to act fast in those kinds of situations.
But wasn't that a key point of contention in Stevens's dissent? I mean, he seemed to think a warrant was totally feasible in this case.
Yeah, you're right on the money there. Stevens argued that the motorhome wasn't going anywhere. It was parked near a courthouse where a warrant could have easily been obtained. He really believed the majority was stretching the automobile exception too far and risking some pretty important privacy protections in the process.
It's a tough one, for sure.
Right.
How do we balance the need for effective law enforcement with the need to protect individual rights?
It's a question that has challenged legal minds for centuries. And in Kearney, the majority seemed to prioritize the need for swift action, even if it meant kind of chipping away at those privacy safeguards.
Okay, let's get into the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the arguments that Chief Justice Berger used to support applying the automobile exception?
Well, Berger relied heavily on precedent. He cited a long line of cases that had already upheld the automobile exception. He emphasized that the court had consistently recognized the unique nature of vehicles, and particularly their mobility, as a justification to allow warrantless searches.
So he was basically saying, look, we've been doing this for a while and it's worked so far.
Yeah, basically. He was arguing for consistency.
Did he address Stevens' argument at all that a motorhome is more like a home than a car because people live in them?
He did, but he wasn't convinced. He argued that trying to determine whether or not a vehicle is being used as a dwelling would just be way too complicated and subjective for law enforcement to deal with.
It seems like he wanted to avoid a lot of gray areas.
Exactly. He basically said that if a vehicle is readily movable and subject to vehicle regulations, then the automobile exception applies. End of story.
I can see how that would be appealing to law enforcement. A nice, neat, straightforward rule. But like we've talked about, it does raise questions about whether the law is really keeping up with the times, especially now that more and more people are using vehicles as homes.
Yeah, it's a good point. And that's exactly why this case continues to be relevant and debated today. It forces us to think critically about how the law should adapt to changing lifestyles and technologies. What made sense in 1985 might need a fresh perspective in 2025.
Right, let's shift gears for a second and look at Justice Stevens' dissenting opinion. I understand he didn't hold back when it came to critiquing the majority's reasoning.
He did not. Stevens argued passionately that the court was expanding the automobile exception at the expense of fundamental privacy rights. He believed the majority's decision went against the very basic principle that warrantless searches should be the exception, not the rule.
He sounds pretty concerned.
He was.
Yeah.
He saw this as part of a larger trend of the court siding with law enforcement maybe a little too often and potentially undermining our Fourth Amendment protections.
So for Stevens, this case was about more than just a motorhome. It was about something bigger.
Right. It was about a concern that we're chipping away at our right to privacy little by little. He was a staunch defender of civil liberties and saw this case as a potentially dangerous step in the wrong direction.
He was worried about a slippery slope.
Exactly. He warned that if we're not careful, exceptions like the automobile exception could slowly erode the very protections that the Fourth Amendment was designed to guarantee.
So both sides make compelling points. It seems like there's no easy answer when it comes to balancing individual rights with the needs of law enforcement.
It's a complex issue for sure, and one that we'll continue to grapple with as technology advances and further blurs the lines between our public and private lives.
All right, so we've really gotten into the weeds with California v. Kearney, exploring the arguments and the dissenting opinions. And now I think it's time to step back and see how this case from 1985 is still influencing how we think about privacy in today's digital world.
Yeah, it's amazing how relevant a case from the era of cassette tapes and shoulder pads can be in our world of smartphones and self-driving cars.
Okay, so let's talk about Kearney's legacy. How has this decision shaped legal thinking about privacy, especially considering all the technological advancements we've seen since 1985?
Well, Kearney really solidified the automobile exception as a powerful tool for law enforcement. It made it much easier for police to conduct warrantless searches of vehicles in a lot of different situations. And even though Stevens and the other dissenting judges raised concerns about privacy, it was the majority opinion that set the precedent.
So even though society and technology have changed drastically since 1985, Kearney is still cited in legal cases today.
Oh, absolutely. It's become a cornerstone of Fourth Amendment law when it comes to vehicle searches.
Blimey. But as you said, the world has changed. We have GPS tracking smartphones that are constantly collecting data ride-sharing services. All of these advancements have added new layers of complexity to how we think about privacy in and around our vehicles.
Right. It's like Kearney was a product of its time. Back then, the focus was on the physical space of a vehicle. Now we have to consider the massive amounts of digital information that are connected to our cars and our movements. It's a whole new ballgame.
It really is.
Yeah.
So how are courts dealing with that? How do you apply legal principles from a pre-digital age to our modern data-driven world?
That's the million-dollar question. And I think there's a growing recognition that the legal framework needs to adapt. A great example is the 2014 Supreme Court case, Riley v. California. In that case, the court ruled that police generally need a warrant to search the contents of a cell phone, even if it's found during a lawful arrest.
Oh, wow. So even though the automobile exception from Carney still stands, courts are drawing new lines when it comes to the digital information we carry in our cars.
Exactly. Our phones are basically mini computers that hold our entire lives. The courts are starting to recognize that the sheer volume of personal data on our phones deserves a higher level of protection even in a car.
I see. It's like the legal system is finally catching up to how technology has changed our expectations of privacy.
Right. It's a slow process, but it's happening.
Okay, so for our listeners out there, what are the key takeaways from California v. Carney that we can apply to our own lives?
Well, I think first and foremost, Carney underscores how important it is to understand our Fourth Amendment rights and the limits of the automobile exception.
Yeah.
Just because you have a lower expectation of privacy in a vehicle doesn't mean that all your rights disappear when you get behind the wheel.
So knowledge is power, especially in a world where technology makes it so easy to blur the lines of privacy.
Exactly. It's a reminder to be aware of what you're carrying in your car and to understand the circumstances under which a warrantless search might be considered legal.
Okay. What else?
I think Carney also encourages us to think critically about how technology is impacting our privacy. As new technologies emerge, we need to think about how existing legal principles, like the automobile exception, might need to be reinterpreted or even rewritten to protect our rights in this new landscape.
So we need to be active participants in shaping the laws that govern our digital lives.
I think so. And finally, I think Carney serves as a cautionary tale about the unintended consequences of legal decisions. The majority opinion in Carney was really focused on the practical needs of law enforcement, but it's very possible they didn't fully anticipate how their decision could impact privacy in a future they couldn't even imagine.
A legal precedent can have ripple effects that go way beyond the original case.
Exactly. And as technology continues to evolve at an incredible pace, I think it becomes even more crucial to re-examine legal principles from the past and ask ourselves if they're still serving us well. Are they protecting our fundamental rights in a world that's vastly different from the one in which those principles were established?
That's a great point. So much has changed since 1985. It's like we're living in a completely different world.
In many ways, we are.
Well, listener, we've reached the end of our deep dive into California v. Carney. Hopefully, we've given you plenty to think about when it comes to privacy technology and the law. But before we go, I want to leave you with one final question. Think about that balance we've been talking about between individual privacy and the needs of law enforcement. It's a complex issue with no easy answers. So here's something to consider. Would you feel differently about the police searching your car versus your RV, or your phone versus your laptop? Where do you draw the line?
It's definitely a thought-provoking question, and I think the answer might surprise some people.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on our next deep dive.